The cheese is melty and the crust is crunchy. This combo's hot and ready for you. Just trust me. Get four slices of deep, deep dish plus one soda for just $5.
Little Caesar's hot and ready lunch combo. Four slices of deep, deep dish pepperoni pizza and a 20-ounce soda. Just $5. Little Caesars.
Pizza, pizza.
At participating locations plus tax.
This is Blessed Trails with Belinda Gale on Equestrian Legacy Radio. Heard around the world on our free mobile app and online at equestrianlegacy.net.
I am so glad our trails have crossed. Oh, the joy you bring to me. And as I look upon each face, such kindness there I see. I wish for you the love of God, a love that never fails. And as we travel life's long path, I wish you blessed trails. Our trails now go their separate ways, and life goes rolling on. I hope our trails will cross again before God takes us home. We share the wondrous love of God, a love that never fails. And as we travel life's long path, I wish you blessed trails. Yes, as we travel life's long path, I wish.
To Blessed Trails. I am your host, Belinda Gale, and our show features interviews with wonderful guests, as well as gospel and patriotic music and songs that just plain lift your heart, most all of them with a definite Western flair. Today's guest is a dear friend of mine who loves
big screen cowboy, a little different from the rest, but he could ride and rope and sing a song with the very best. He knew how to use his fist, and he didn't mind at all if he had to save the ranch and the pretty girl from the bad outlaws. And we knew him as the Bronze Buckaroo. He was a happy cowboy doing what he came to do. Well, they said his skin was different, but us kids never knew. To us he was the Bronze Buckaroo. Now if you were a bad guy who'd robbed a bank or two, you didn't want to run into the Bronze Buckaroo. Cause he'd say, drop your guns and throw up your hands, we're taking that money back. And no need to ask, because he wouldn't cut you any slack. And we knew him as the Bronze Buckaroo. He was a happy cowboy, doing what he came to do. Well, they said his skin was different, but us kids never knew. To us he was the Bronze Buckaroo. Big white stallion, Stardust was his name. And with his fancy six guns, he drove the rustlers from the reins. Now they said he came from Harlem. Well, boys, I've been around. Best I can guess, that must be some West Texas border town. And we knew him as the Franz Buckaroo. He was a happy cowboy, doing what he came to do. They said his skin was different, but heck, us kids never knew. To us, he was the Bronze Buckaroo. We called him the Bronze Buckaroo. How about a hand for the Bronze Buckaroo?
Radio. You gotta love it. Well, my guest today, along with his sweet wife Teresa, has been a good friend of mine and a fellow member of the Western Music Association Board of Directors for a good number of years now. He is an award-winning songwriter and producer, garnering Song of the Year awards and nominations from the Western Music Association and a coveted Western Heritage Wrangler Award from the National Cowboy and Western Heritage Museum in Oklahoma City for his producing talents. In addition to his radio show, he formed the group the Red Hot Rhythm Rustlers in 2010, who has gone on to win numerous awards as well. The Western music facet of his life I know well, and I'm eager to share his music, but I'm also delighted to get to know my friend better as I share him with all of you. I am tickled to welcome to the show Marvin Odell. Welcome, Marvin.
Thank you, Belinda. Good to be on the show with you.
Thank you. Sorry about bailing out on you for the second there. These are, you know, we call in for this show. All of us do, and sometimes calls just go away.
I thought you just didn't want to talk to me. I thought you changed your mind.
I changed my mind. I decided not to have you on the show.
Well, goodbye.
Before we go further, though, I do want you to tell our listeners about the song Bronze Buckaroo and who that was about.
Well, the Bronze Buckaroo, of course, was the B-Western cowboy movie star, the only one who was a black cowboy star. His name was Herb Jeffries, and he created that role himself when he suggested that inner-city kids should have a cowboy hero like Roy Rogers and Gene Autry. And so when he suggested it, his producers said, well, why don't you play the part? And he didn't really want to do it, according to what he's told me, but he decided that they couldn't find anybody else who could ride, rope, and sing, do all three. And he could do all three, so he wound up taking the role. He had some African-American blood in him, but he wasn't 100% black. He was more French than anything. And they darkened his skin with charcoal for the films so that he'd look more black.
Wow.
he was truly the last of the singing cowboys. We sometimes credit Rex Allen with that, but in movie roles, Rex Allen was the last, I suppose, to come along and sing in the movies in a big-time way. But Herb was the last one to survive of the singing cowboys, passed away when he was almost 101 years old.
Wow. Yeah, I know we had a big celebration for him at the Western Music Association for his 100th birthday. So that was, and he was there, which was pretty remarkable. But that was pretty exciting. Well, thank you for filling us in on that. And I'd like to kind of start at the beginning with you, Marvin. I mean, we've visited a lot and we talk a lot about music. And I know that you were in the ministry for a good part of your life, and we'll certainly talk about that. But, you know, tell me about you growing up. You grew up at the jumping off point for the wagon trains, right?
In Independence, Missouri. That's my hometown. And I grew up, of course, loving all the history of the West. I don't know why, but I was interested in it all as a child. I suppose television provoked that with the Western movies. But I always had an interest in the Western songs. I was always intrigued by the Sons of the Pioneers and their music when I was just a kid. And never lost that. Always through the years of my life, I've listened to and collected Western music.
Wow. So what did Marvin Odell do as a kid? Were you like, you know, I mean, living in Independence, Missouri, were you like out, were you a hunter? Did you, you know, did you guys live on a ranch? Did you live in town?
We lived in town. My dad was a truck driver, and very dismayed that I didn't become one. He thought I was throwing my life away when I but I decided I wanted to be something in the ministry. When I decided that God wanted me to be in the ministry, I remember I was at a Youth for Christ meeting in Kansas City with a bunch of kids, a couple thousand, I suppose. And I remember I was 16. And I remember a call to for all who would be willing to surrender to serve the Lord full time with their lives to come forward. And I went down with maybe 25 kids or so, and I looked across that row of kids and I said, I don't know if any of these kids really mean this or not, but I really mean it. This is a hard line commitment for me, and I'm sticking with it.
Wow.
And by God's grace, I did. And,
Wow. So your dad was a truck driver, obviously, but my dad drove truck as well. That's how we like kept the ranch afloat with him driving truck. But he was gone a lot. So was your father on the road a lot then, or was he more like a day, you know, where they drove it for the day and were home at night?
He drove it for the day, but he drove during the night. He hauled gasoline, and so they would get to the stations at nighttime when a lot of them were closed or closing down and not as busy. And so I only saw my father on weekends. I never really thought much about it growing up. I just thought that was the way life was. So when I got up to go to school in the morning, he was asleep. And when I came home, he was gone to work. And so, but, you know, I never thought about it too much. I never thought I was lacking something or missing something in life. My father was a good father on weekends, and we had great fun together, and he'd take me. He'd take me fishing and hunting and stuff like that. So I had a good childhood. I really did. Very normal,
so
I suppose. But
was church a part, you know, going to church on Sundays a part of your life growing up, or was it?
We never asked the question, "What are we doing on Sunday?" my mother made sure that we went to church every Sunday morning and Sunday evening, and my father never went because he wasn't he wasn't home and he went much, and so when he was home, he just wanted to stay home. But he never minded if we went, and he would have been upset if my mother hadn't taken us.
Well, it sounds to me like maybe this might have happened when you were 16 at the meeting. But I'm always interested to find out when, for my guests, when the Lord went from being, you know, God out there, you know, someone who's out there, watching what you do. And, you know, my mother always used him to kind of, you know, try to keep us kids in line, you know, God's watching you kind of stuff. but went from that to, you know, you realize that you could have an intimate relationship with the Lord. And it was more of a complete different dynamic than, you know, the God out there. He was God inside of you. How was that for you?
Yeah, well, when I was 12 years old, I got baptized because all my friends had been baptized. I was the only one who hadn't been yet, so I just thought I needed to do that. But it didn't really, you know, it wasn't in my heart. It didn't have anything to do with a relationship with the Lord. It just was something I felt like I needed to do to be cool, you know, to be accepted and part of the group. But when I was 16 at a Youth for Christ meeting, I realized after sitting in one of those meetings after school that the Christ needed to be more real in my life. And I came home that night and went to bed, and I laid in my bed thinking, I need to have a personal relationship with Jesus Christ. I need to accept him as my personal Savior. And I got out of my bed, and I got down on my knees by the side of my bed, and I prayed, and I just asked Christ to come into my life and told him I wanted to live for him. So, and it was about a year later then that I made the surrender to go into the ministry full-time.
Wow.
And, of course, God by then was very real in my life.
Right. Wow. That is so cool. So you went right out of high school, and you went straight to seminary then?
Yes, I did. I tell you an interesting story. I went back to Independence, Missouri just a few years ago and drove by the old house I grew up in and went up and I knocked on the door and asked the folks there if I could, and I told them I grew up in that house, and I asked if I could come in and see the house, and they said sure. So we walked into the house, and I went back to my bedroom where I was as a child, and I went to the spot where I knelt by the side of my bed, and I turned to the post. I said, right here's the spot where I received Jesus Christ as my personal Savior. And they went, and they were Christian people, and they said, how sweet. And they were really moved by that. So, yeah, I went to Bible college right out of school. I didn't know what I wanted to do, but I was very shy growing up, very afraid of people and backward. And when I went to college, I decided, if I'm really going to serve the Lord with my life, I can't be shy anymore like this. I've got to come out of this. And so I just decided to take the risks and jump in and talk to people. And after a while, I got past that shyness and went on and got my education there.
Wow. Now, is that where you met Teresa?
I did meet Teresa there. Yes, I did. And I proposed to her there, and we got married there.
Oh, wow. So how long did you guys date, and how long were you engaged?
Well, we were married 9 months after I met her.
Oh, wow. Good for you. No wasting time with you.
Yeah, hey, when I saw someone that pretty and knew she was slightly interested, I thought I'd better go for it. I might not ever get that chance again.
She's an amazing, remarkable woman, and y'all
yes,
are.
She is.
And oh my goodness! So yeah, you did good getting her, snatching her up quick.
She's far more than I deserve. That's for sure.
Well, I don't know about that, but she's pretty doggone special, and you are too.
Yeah.
Did you write To the Moon and Back? We're getting ready to play this song.
Yes, I did. Yes, I did. I wrote it in a Western setting, but it sort of tells the story of our ministry and life. We never lost a child, like the song says, but we did lose a child to the world. And so it's those kinds of things. And her commitment to follow me wherever I would go in the ministry is kind of what was the impetus of the idea of the song.
Right. And I'm not complaining. I can see her just saying, like putting her head down, going, "Okay, let's just do this." That's
oh yeah,
to me.
And
yeah.
we started off with so little, and God's blessings became so great. We didn't become wealthy ranchers like the song indicates, but we became wealthy in the blessings of God on our lives.
Wow. Well, I'm eager for our listeners to hear "To the Moon and Back."
It was something you knew we just couldn't do.
Graduated?
Well, we made the mistake of stepping out of school for a quarter to get married and thought we could get back in before I got drafted, but it didn't work out that way. But looking back on it, I can see God's hand directing all of that too. The experiences that we had, even in spending 2 years in Germany and then a year in Vietnam when we were apart, all that was good for us, and it directed us into places and positions and into people's lives who have really been a blessing and a benefit to me and the ministry over the years.
Wow. So, okay, now something, when you sent me your bio to kind of go over, I was stunned, I have to say, because you're just this mild-mannered, you know, pastor, singer friend of mine. And so tell us what happened after Vietnam.
Well, after Vietnam, I had, of course, gone back home. And in a few weeks, I received a letter from the Central Intelligence Agency offering me a job just out of the blue. And I was as stunned as you were. But I had worked in intelligence the 3 years I was in the service. And so because of that, I already had training and recognition and understanding of security clearances and all of that. So they offered me the job, and I looked at it and went, I'll probably never have an opportunity like this again. So I took the job.
Wow.
We moved to Washington, D.C. But after 2.5 years on that job, which was a very good job and a very good paying job, and, they also hired Teresa because they like to have husbands and wives together there for security reasons. And they hired her. But after 2.5 years, I would get up each morning and I would say to myself, this isn't what I told God I would do with my life. And I was remembering back to that Youth for Christ meeting where I walked up and said, I don't know if all these other kids mean this or not, but I do. And I never could get away from that. And so finally, it just made me miserable. So I went in and talked to my pastor, and I told him my story. And he said, well, you need to make a decision if you're going to do what you told God you were going to do, or if you're going to stay with as a government worker. And so I made the decision that day to go in and give a 2 weeks' notice and see if I could find a place in the ministry.
Mm.
I could have retired a lot sooner if I'd stayed with the CIA.
This is true. Probably a lot more,
More money. Yeah. But it wouldn't have been near as fulfilling. I would have spent my whole life and looked back on it and said, what did I accomplish for any good at all?
Right.
And I didn't want to, that's what I didn't want to happen.
You don't want to have those regrets. So how did you just jump into a church, or how did transitioning from that, from government, you know, CIA guy to the ministry, how did that transition work for you?
Well, my pastor was leaving for the Holy Land, and he said, when we had that talk, he said, well, I'll be gone for a couple of weeks. When I get back, if you haven't found anything, I'll put you on our church staff here. So I did actually spend a lot of time over that 2 weeks trying to find somewhere, and I talked to pastors in Florida and Arizona and Kentucky and different places. But nothing was there for me, and when he came back, he put me on staff immediately as director of I forget what they called it now. Actually, it was just to contact people and stay in touch with visitors and things like that to see if we could mm-hmm. invite them back and that type of thing. I can't remember what the role was called now. And then a few months later, our youth director there at the church quit, and I had worked some with him, and the kids all wanted me to take the job, so the pastor gave me that position.
Wow.
There I was.
And then music played a part of your ministry for a while as well.
Well, actually, the music director of that church had been one of my music professors when I was in college, and he got me involved as his backup director when he was out of town or had to go somewhere. And, of course, we both sang in the choir, Teresa and I, and did special music in church. And an evangelist came through, and we did some songs for his meetings, and he came to me afterwards and said, asked if I would travel with him and provide music for his meetings, and I felt led to do that. He did a lot of meetings in small churches where they didn't have good music and weren't able to provide it, and so we did that, and just singing songs. But a year later, I had a lot of pastors asking me to come back and do the preaching in their churches as well. So after a year, I split off with him and began to do the music and the preaching, and I did that for 6 years. Teresa and I did, and held concerts and stuff like that in churches.
You basically evangelized for 6 years.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Wow. That's a tough life. That's pretty much constantly on the road when you're an evangelist.
And it's constantly by faith too.
Yes.
Well, I won't take your time with it, but I tell you some very interesting stories about how God provided in unusual, miraculous ways for us during that time.
Well, why don't you share one of them with us? I'd love hearing stories like that.
Well, one night I was preaching in the Kansas City area, and things had gotten really tough for us financially. I had spent 3 weeks working that month and hadn't earned a penny because of the expenses had been about what the income had been. And we were really struggling to pay our house payment, and our rent payment and our car payment. So Teresa and I kind of had fussed about it a little bit, and I preached a message on faith, and when I did that night, she came up to the altar and began to pray, and I went down to pray with her, and we told God we were going to trust him no matter what, and so apologized to each other for fussing about it. And then I had to go out to eat with the pastor after church. But just before we left the church, a man walked up to me and he said, I got a bonus check at work today, and the Lord's laid it on my heart to give it to you. And I said, well, I don't really want you to do anything that your wife wouldn't understand, because we had prayed for his wife that week. She was having struggling with her faith, and she didn't know the Lord. And I said, your wife might not understand if you go giving money away. And so he said, oh, no, I have to. And he stuck it inside my suit coat pocket like it was burning his fingers and walked off. So I went to the restaurant with the pastor and his wife, and while we were waiting for our food, I got up to go to the restroom. And while I was in there, I opened up that envelope to see what the check was. And to the penny, Belinda, it was the exact amount we needed for our rent and our car payment that month.
Wow.
Just, just one of those things where God just blows you away, you know.
Oh, my. I love those kind of stories. I love that. Oh, my gosh. They give me goosebumps.
So many things happened during that 6 years. I almost wished I had never gone on a guaranteed paycheck. Because when you're not on a guaranteed paycheck, you have to trust God. And when you have to trust God, he comes through in just wonderful ways.
Oh, my gosh. That is so true. That's so true. Well, I do want us to get to this next song, and this is another one that you wrote, Michael Was a Cowboy. Can you tell us about that?
Well, I had a nephew. His name was Michael, my brother Pat's son, and Michael was just a great kid. I mean, the kind of kid you look at and go, how come all kids aren't this way? He loved the Lord. He went to church regularly. He just loved to talk about church. He was always smiling, always having fun, just all these delightful people. And he got leukemia and struggled with it until leukemia won the battle and he passed away. I was driving from California to somewhere in Arizona on the road, and all of a sudden I told Teresa, start writing this down, because I had these thoughts about Michael, if he had been a cowboy, because his life exemplified all the values that we like to think the cowboys exemplify.
Mm-hmm.
And so I just made him, even though he wasn't a cowboy, everything I say about him was true in his life. Even the he sang at a little Opry in Kansas City, and the girls all loved him, and he'd go in there on Saturday nights and sing. So even that part of the song is something that was true of Michael. Just a great, great kid, and we miss him dearly.
Well, let's hear this song about Michael. Michael Was a Cowboy.
Michael was a cowboy, long and lean and tall. With a smile alone, he could win the West. Like all good cowboys, he loved his ma and pa. He could ride and rope him with the very best. Now Michael rides with Jesus through the canyons of a better land, still waters and green pastures all around. He rides free and easy on a horse he calls forgiveness, with nothing in this world to hold him down. Michael rides the master's horses now. Michael was a cowboy, he never robbed a train, stole a horse or put someone to rest. The best of the cowboys, with a deep belief in God, he lived by the code of the West. Now Michael rides with Jesus through the canyons of a better land, still waters and green pastures all around. He rides free and easy on a horse he calls forgiveness, with nothing in this world to hold him down. Michael rides the master's horses now. Michael was a cowboy with a guitar and a song. Cowgirls would gather all around when they heard he was riding in on a Saturday night to play and sing for the big show in town. Michael was a cowboy, but an outlaw took his life. We laid him down and said our goodbyes. But the Barnum Ranch in heaven hired Michael on that day. Now he sings with angels round an old campfire. Now Michael rides with Jesus through the canyons of a better land, still waters and green pastures all around. He rides free and easy on a horse he calls forgiveness, with nothing in this world to hold him down. Michael rides the master's horses now.
Oh, that's a lovely tribute, Marvin.
Thank you.
Lovely tribute. Oh, I love it. Well, one of the things you touch. Go ahead.
Well, I was starting to say I was a little concerned about whether my brother would be happy that I wrote the song. So I was real hesitant about even telling him because I was afraid he might think it was too personal. But he actually learned to love the song and sings it himself now for other folks.
Oh, that's sweet. I love that. Well, one of the things you touched on was when you decided to leave the ministry, not leave the ministry, but go from evangelizing to actually pastor a church. And you probably tackled one of the most difficult things you can do as a pastor, and that's to go start one from nothing.
Well, it's not the way I wanted to do it. I told God I was willing to do it, but I wanted to find a nice, I figured I'd been around enough over 6 years that some church would probably, that has a nice parsonage and a nice salary to pay somebody, might want me. But I came to Southern California. I was wrapping up some meetings that I had scheduled. And I was in the Ventura County area, and I was in three different towns around Thousand Oaks, California. And each one of those 3 weeks, the pastor of the church I was preaching at would say, you know, Thousand Oaks, California is really growing. They could use another good church over there. You know, start one over there. And I couldn't get that off of my mind. So when we traveled back to Missouri, where we were headquartering at the time, all the way, I guess, thinking, well, we should go to California and start one there in that area. Not what I wanted to do, but what God seemed to insist that we do. So we did, and he blessed, and it took off well. And it's been, we were there for 27 years at the same church. So it was a good time.
Yes, and that's a beautiful area. Like, there's worse areas to have to pastor a church, because it's gorgeous.
Well, that's
there.
For sure. Yeah. You know, when I went into evangelism, everybody said, if you can't make it an evangelist, don't do that. That's a big mistake. Well, God took care of us. And then when I left evangelism with 2 years of meetings already booked ahead, people said, don't quit evangelism. That's a good ministry for you. You can't make it start preaching in California. Seemed like God was always directing us against the tide, but
yes.
But he took care of us.
Oh, well, thank God he knows better than we do. So it always pays to listen to him. That's for sure.
Yeah. And he knows where we're lacking in intelligence. I went. Hello.
Yeah, I'm here.
Oops. Oh, you're there. Okay. I went into Thousand Oaks and I looked around for a place to meet at the oldest church. No income coming in. And I stupidly signed a contract to lease a building to hold our church service in. In my mind, I just assumed we would raise the offerings as the people came to church. I didn't even know if anybody would come or not. So looking back on it, it wasn't a very bright move. But we always did have the money. We never came up short.
Oh, my gosh. That's really stepping out on faith.
Yeah. Stupidly.
Oh, gosh. Well, that's when the Lord shines, though. You know, when it looks like that shouldn't happen, and he just – so then when he makes it happen, and you know it's him. And so I love it, how he works that out. It gets a little nail-biting sometimes, but
– I think he looks down sometimes and just says, oh, I'm going to have to help these folks.
Probably that, too. I'm going to have to get them out of this bit of predicament.
Yeah.
Oh, gosh. So then after 27 years, you retired from the church. And then that is at the point where you shifted gears and started going into Western music. How did that transition happen?
Well, I had a heart attack in 2001 and had open heart surgery in 2002. And if that hadn't happened, I'd probably still be at the church today. But they recommended that I unload the church in my life. Mm-hmm. And I didn't do it just because the doctor recommended. I would have ignored the doctor and done what I if I felt God wanted me to stay there. But I had a young man on staff who filled in for me while I was laid up with the heart surgery, and he did such a great job and actually got new people in the church, and it was growing during that time. And I looked at that and what my doctor said, and I felt like this is probably a good time. It's hard to step down from a pastor that you've been in a long time. You always fear that the next pastor won't keep things up. But I just felt like this was the right time. So I stepped down and went ahead and retired earlier than I should have. I did wind up going back to California 2 years later and pastoring another church for 8 years. But during that time, I thought I've always wanted to try to write cowboy music. I had told Teresa many times over the years, I think if I could just take a couple weeks away from the church and go somewhere, I could write some songs. But I never wanted to take the time away from the church, so I just didn't.
Right.
But then while I was in that period of time, I just decided I'd sit down and try. And so I wrote some songs and didn't know who to sing them for. I was kind of embarrassed about it, you know, and didn't want to just walk up to somebody like you, an accomplished performer and songwriter, and say, would you listen to my songs? So, I was talking to Patty Clayton one day at a Western festival just there as a DJ, really, and I mentioned I'd written some songs. She said, well, why don't you send some to me? I'd like to hear them. So I said, really? Are you serious? You really mean it? She said, yeah. So I put them on a CD and sent them to her. She was very complimentary and critical of a couple of things, and she helped me out and actually has recorded a couple of my songs now.
Nice.
But she's the one who really I owe a big thanks to for just kind of setting me free to to go ahead and write some more and not be afraid to sing them to people.
Wow. So now you mentioned the DJ part. Now you had where did that come up in your life, having your Western music radio show?
Well, I'm also a big fan of traditional country music and bluegrass music. And so I was in a store in Southern California that teaches bluegrass instrumentation and teaches kids how to play guitar and fiddle and dobro and things like that. And I bought a lot of bluegrass music there, and I got to know the owner of the store real well. And he was hosting a show on radio of bluegrass music, and he asked me if I would like to learn how to do the show so I could back him up when he would go on vacations. And I said, sure, I'd love to learn that. So I went in, and this was in 1998, and he showed me the ropes. I didn't know at the time he was really planning on giving up the show in about a year. And so I co-hosted with him for a while, and then he had me host some on my own, and next thing I knew he was gone and I was in his seat. And that got me started. And then they had a traditional country music show that followed my bluegrass show, and I got to where I filled in for the DJ there when he was gone. And then they had a children's hour at 6 o'clock in the morning, and with this real off-the-air, foul-mouthed girl. But on the air, she was Miss Sweet Cuddling with the kids. But she was very temperamental, and they canceled her show. They felt like kids probably weren't listening to radio at 6 o'clock in the morning on Saturday anyway. And so they were trying to decide what to do with the hour, and I said, well, just let me put a cowboy music hour in. Well, they debated it and thrashed it around, and finally, I think because they couldn't figure anything else to do with it, they let me do it. So I started playing cowboy and western music, Songs of Yours and the Sons of the San Joaquin, anybody I could gather. And the show became one of the most popular shows at the station, and the last year I was there became the best fundraising show of the station.
Wow.
So it was a great success. And then when I retired and had to move out of California, I went to internet radio. And but now we're on two brick-and-mortar stations in California also, along with the internet. So.
And that's a tough thing in this day and age to get on a brick-and-mortar radio show, because they have all of them. The big radio conglomerates have such a vice grip on these small stations everywhere and really dictate what they can play and, you know, and what their shows are going to be. And so kudos to you. That's excellent.
I'm sorry?
I said kudos to you for that. That's excellent to have regular brick and mortar radio as well as internet. So that's good for you.
Yeah,
so
we're on KKRN in Redding, California, KKRN,
okay.
And KTMK in Lompoc, California.
Oh, okay, great.
As well as two internet stations.
Wrote that down, I hope. So that would be, say that one more time. Oh, yeah, we'll have you say this again at the end of the show, because we're going to go over that at the end. So I'll have you repeat that again. Don't let me forget to have you do that. And so now, so you've got the radio show going. You've got you're out there stepping out a little bit with your music and your songwriting. So tell us how the Red Hot Rhythm Rustlers and the Silver Screen Cowboy Project came to be.
Well, after producing the double album CD that paid tribute to the movie Cowboys of the 30s and 40s, I got to thinking that maybe we could put together a stage show and show pictures of these cowboys. And I could include some of the people who were on the double album, Dave Stamey and Bill Barwick and others who had given me songs for that album. But when I tried to put the stage show together, none of those guys were available because they're all so busy with their careers. And so I thought, well, I'm going to have to put together my own band here to do this. So I asked the girls from Journey West, Audrey, Gale, and Dawn from that real fine singing group, if they would commit to a 10-week run of a show like that. And I asked Tom Boyer, who I was playing guitar with at the time, if he would commit to the 10 weeks, and another unnamed individual, if he would commit to the 10 weeks, and I'm not naming it because he committed and dropped out on me.
Okay.
So we went ahead, though, without him, and I had to learn a whole lot of songs that I didn't know to fill in for him. But we did the show for 10 weeks in Palm Desert, California, at the church I was pastoring there at the time, and it was very well received. And so after the 10 weeks, we sat down, and I said, you know, we all enjoyed playing this show for 10 weeks together. Why don't we put together a band and play together all the time? And no one has to give up their other gigs, and no one will be the star of this band. We'll just be a band, no featured performers. Everybody will just do what they do well, and we'll give ourselves a name. And so that's what happened, and we formed a group, and we called it the Red Hot Rhythm Rustlers because I wanted something that said hot. So that's where that came from. Because those girls are hot when they sing those harmonies. They sing.
Oh, my God.
And Tom Boyer on the guitar is a hot guitar player.
Yes.
I'm kind of the weak link. But
I don't know about that. You hold that bass down pretty solidly for everybody, but oh, my goodness. Yeah, and the girls are awesome. Their harmony vocals are really beautiful.
Oh.
So, yeah, that was good. But now, what made you put the Silver Screen Cowboy Project together that really launched the Red Hot Rhythm Rustlers?
Well, I was going to write 12 songs myself about movie cowboys, and I had written 9 or 10. And that's when I got to thinking, well, there are a lot of good ones already written about some of the movie cowboys, and if I would include them, that would give some exposure to some of our other great artists like Dave Stamey and Bill Barr. Who else is on there? It's been so long since I looked at it, I can't remember. my goodness, I can't even remember who all was on the project. I haven't looked at it in so long. Well, and the girls, Journey West at the time, who were not part of the Red Hot Rhythm Rustlers, had them on there. And so that's how that album came about. I wanted the songs, but I wanted to try to help some other people get some exposure too.
Right. And you got a special award for that.
Curly was on there.
I thought Curly was on there, but I didn't want to speak out of turn. I thought he was on there.
Yeah, Curly Musgrave did a beautiful job on a song called Downtown Matinee.
Yep.
Les Gilliam was on there. Yes, and the Western Music Association awarded it with the President's Award. That was really nice and quite a surprise.
Which is not, that award is not given out willy-nilly. That's, you know, given out, you know, just for specific things that warrant it. So it's not like a yearly award. So congratulations on that. And so, and then you branched out into doing some producing.
Well, I had done some producing of gospel music years ago, so I wasn't a rookie at it. But when I did my personal album, the songs that we've played, the last couple songs are from my personal album. I really did that album just to get the songs out. I wasn't planning on becoming a performer. But and so I didn't really put much work into the producing part of it. I did some, but I left it up to some other folks. And but after I was done with it, there were some things I just wasn't happy with. And as I looked at it, I wished I had gone back and put a little more production effort into it myself. And so I started working with an engineer when we did the Silver Screen Cowboy project here in Arizona, and I was really impressed with his ability to hear things. And I think he's just a wonderful, wonderful engineer, and he and I work really well together. And so I started opening some doors to do some production if somebody was interested. I haven't really worked at seeking out production jobs, but I really enjoy doing it.
Mm-hmm.
And working with Mickey Daniel was a pleasure. This guy.
one of our young guns coming up. You know, she's been on the show, and she's delightful. And I was just over the moon excited for you both when that's the project that won the Wrangler Award. And I mean, what a validating thing for both Mickey as a young performer that she's on the right path, and for you as a producer that you know what you're doing.
Well, working with someone like her makes it pretty easy, I tell you. She was so cooperative, never one time fussed about anything. You know, young kids who are really good could get temperamental if they wanted to, but she's such a sweetheart that if I suggested something, she was always willing to try it, willing to be honest if she didn't feel comfortable with it. We worked so well together, just great fun.
Wow. Well, congratulations on the award for that, and just the way you branched out. And this next song that we're getting ready to do, I think this is Patty Clayton's song, Worship in the Prairie Wind?
Patty wrote that song. Yes, she did.
Yes.
I first heard that song and thought, that our girls have got to do that song.
Mm-hmm.
It was just so pretty. And plus, we were trying to build up a little gospel repertoire anyway for churches. And that song is just perfect.
I heard Patty the first time. I think I heard Patty do this first in a jam session, and I was like, that is just flat a beautiful song. So I am so glad that the girls recorded it, because with their beautiful voices. So let's listen to Worship in the Prairie Wind.
Again to sing and kneel
together, together, as they travel across this land and worship in the prairie wind. They gather here together with their Bibles in their hands. They gather here together with their Bibles in their hands and worship in the prairie wind.
Oh, that was beautiful. How those girls can sing. Oh, my goodness. And what a gorgeous song.
They're wonderful.
Oh, yeah. It's, and they're neat ladies. It's got to be fun to work with those women on an ongoing basis.
Oh, they're so much fun. They laugh so easily, and they just roll in stitches over anything. So we laugh. If we didn't laugh so much, we'd get more practice in, and we'd be better than what we do.
I hear you. So, oh my gosh, I can't believe our hour's just about done. So, Marvin, what's on the horizon for you and for the Red Hot Rhythm Rustlers?
Well, we need to do another project. You and I need to sit down and talk about Barry Ward and Mickey Daniel.
Yes.
I'm here soon. If we can get that off the ground, I'd really like to do that.
That would be fabulous. I would love to do that. Love both of those people and admire them. It would be fun to work with you and your fabulous engineer as well. That would be cool.
Well, now we're both in Arizona, too. That helps. And
that
I don't know. We'll see what happens this next year. I moved this past year, and Teresa retired, and we got kind of tangled up with some stuff like that. So I haven't done much creative work in the past year. We did work with Lily Robert on an album, and that was fun. So I don't know what next year holds. We'll find out. We'll see what God has for us.
Isn't that, it's part of the adventure, isn't it? Just seeing what's around the bend. I love this adventure we call life, and especially when we put God in control. It's a lot more fun and exciting in a good way.
Yes, it is.
So remind people please tell us about how people can get in touch with you, not only to get a hold of your music, but if they wanted to hire you in the Red Hot Rhythm Rustlers. I've seen the show that you put on about the Silver Screen Cowboys, and it's I've been able to guest on it with you guys, and it is an extremely entertaining, very fun and funny show. We didn't even talk about the pastor comedian ventriloquist guy you guys have in your show that just makes you just roll on the floor laughing. He is so good. So good.
Well, our show begins January 4th this year, and it will run for 12 weeks in Glendale, Arizona, right off 45th Avenue and Bell. And you can go to redhotrhythmrustlers.com, and all the information is there, and you can order tickets for the show there. It's a full dinner show, all you can eat, chuck wagon type food, and ribs and chicken and beans and all that stuff. And I'm hoping that Belinda Gale will be one of our guests again this year.
I'm
coordinate her schedule with ours.
We will definitely have to coordinate. And also, you guys have taken this show on the road. So, if there are any promoters out there or people that are listening to this that think that this show would be a good fit in your area, please get in touch with Marvin, because it is a fantastic show that's extremely entertaining. If you love Western music, you love the Sons of the Pioneers and all these Silver Screen Cowboy songs, it is definitely the go-to show. You guys do a fabulous job with that.
Well, thank you so much, Belinda. And folks can tune into Around the Campfire, our cowboy music show, on if you live in the Redding, California area, on KKRN there. And if you're in the Lompoc, California area, KPNK carries the show. The hottest brand in town, and we're also on Defenders of Freedom Radio and EarsRadio.com, both of those internet sites. So you have to go to the sites. They all schedule the shows at different times. You have to go to the websites to find the schedules.
Yep. Busy guy. Well, thank you again for being on the show, and looking forward to seeing you guys, and We have a board meeting coming up in January or something sometime that we've got to, yes, wrangle in. So if I don't see you before then, I'll see you then. And thank you so much for being on the show. And I would love for you to set up your award-winning Song of the Year, Jesus and Roy, to close out this segment.
I'm honored that you had me on the show, Belinda. Thank you very much. The show is sort of autobiographic. I actually wrote it for someone else who wanted me to write them a song that would include the Western and a religious theme. But after I wrote it for them, they didn't want to do it. So we just decided to do it ourselves. And it turned out to be pretty good for us.
It did. It's one of those things that they're like, man, they're bopping their head. I could have recorded that song.
I think maybe it was so autobiographical for me that it didn't fit the other individual. So maybe that was the reason.
That can happen. Well, thank you again so much for being with us, Marvin. And we're going to listen now to Jesus and Roy.
When I was growing up, I was no stranger to trouble. My mama knew she'd need a lot of help, so she took me to the church where they taught me the good book, and I learned to love the stories it would tell. It was church every Sunday and Saturday matinees with the king of the cowboys of the West. I couldn't believe my eyes, the way he'd ride and rope and shoot. It seemed to me Roy Rogers did it best. Then came that Sunday morning when I partnered up with Jesus. I left the pew and moseyed down the aisle. In just a few short weeks, I was baptized in cold water. I wish you could have seen my mama smile. As my life moved along, I faced temptation to do wrong, but Roy's example showed me what I should avoid. I learned to honor mom and dad, our country and the flag. I'm the man I am today because of Jesus and Roy. Roy saved my life and Jesus saved my soul. They made an honest man out of this boy. Well, I live by the Ten Commandments and I follow the cowboy code. I wonder where I'd be today without Jesus and Roy. Tomboy, or pick one.
Cowboys are riding on Teresa Odell on my far right here. These girls doing beautiful harmonies and lead vocals and playing guitar and everything else with the multi-talented Journey West from Phoenix, Arizona. By name, they are Gail Rogers on the far end, in the middle, Dawn Pett, and right over here on my right, Audrey McLaughlin. And this guy back here playing the Hot Licks on the guitar is from San Diego, California. He is an invited participant in the Chet Atkins Appreciation Society in Nashville every year because of his ability to thumb pick the guitar. We are very proud to have him with us. His name is Tom Boyer. I'm Marvin O'Dell. We hope you're having a great time tonight along with us. Let's get back to this song here as we work through it one more time. Thank you very much.
Oh, what a fun show, and how fun it was getting to know Marvin better today, and what a life of service he's had. Even now through his music, he is uplifting and encouraging others. And this time of year always brings out the servant heart of people, and there seems to be an extra effort to reach out and serve. But I would encourage all of us to try to hang on to that attitude of service all year long. That is something we should all aspire to do. In fact, we are all actually called to serve. In Galatians 5:13, it tells us, "For you were called to freedom, brothers, only do not use your freedom as an opportunity for the flesh, but through love serve one another." So as we go full swing into this Christmas season, my wish for you is that amidst all the hustle and bustle and myriad of demands on your time, that you'll be able to slow down a bit and not miss an opportunity to serve one another through love. Well, that's our show for today. I am so delighted y'all could join us. Thank you for giving us the gift of your time. And thank you again to our very special guest, Marvin O'Dell, for sharing a bit of himself with us today. And, of course, a huge thank you to my amazing producer, Gary Holt, for all he does behind the scenes to make this show happen. And please remember, all of the fabulous shows on Equestrian Legacy Radio are archived for you to listen to at your convenience. You can even download our nifty mobile app and take us on the go with you. So if you like our shows, please help us spread the word by liking us on Facebook and telling your friends about us. Thank you again for joining us today, and until next week, may all of your trails be blessed.
A poor orphan girl named Maria was walking to market one day. She stopped for rest by the roadside, where a bird with a broken wing lay. A few moments passed till she saw it, for its feathers were covered with sand. But soon, clean and wrapped, it was traveling in the warmth of Maria's small hand. She happily gave her last peso on a cage made of rushes and twine. She fed it loose corn from the market as she watched it grow stronger with time. Now the Christmas Eve service was coming, and the church shone with tinsel and light. And all of the town folk brought presents to lay at the manger that night. They brought diamonds and incense and perfume, packages fit for a king. But for one ragged bird in a small cage, Maria had nothing to bring. She waited till just before midnight, so no one would see her go in. Crying, she knelt by the manger, for her gift was unworthy of him. Voice spoke to her from the darkness, spring. Then open the door, let me see. Though trembling she did as he asked her, and out of the cage the bird flew, soaring up into the rafters on a wing that had healed good as new. Just then the midnight bell rang out, and the little bird started to sing a song that no words could recapture, whose beauty was fit for a king. Now Maria felt blessed just to listen to the cascade of notes sweet and long, as her offering was lifted to heaven by the very first nightingale's song.
Hey, check out these sweet reindeer socks. Only 99 cents.
Oh, yeah? Got this Samsung Tab 4 8.0 from AT&T for free.
Free?
Had a hard time finding a stocking it would fit in, though.
Whoa, no need to rub it in.
Rubbing it in would be telling you I got the tablet for free when I bought a new Samsung Galaxy smartphone on AT&T Next, which I did.
Oh, AT&T, mobilizing your world.
Free tablet requires 2-year agreement. Must activate eligible service on both Galaxy devices. Fees, charges, and restrictions apply. Available at select locations. See store for details.